Well, welcome to Eric's Perspective. Joining us today at MHANGS Gallery is Phoebe Beasley, renowned artist and friend. Phoebe, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
I thought I'd start just by trying to remember how we first met. As I recall, I know it's been several years ago.
But
do you remember? Was that in a small space?
I came to your gallery, and it was to see someone else's exhibit.
Oh, okay.
Because I was not a part of your stable of artists at that point. I think that's what I remember. Either that or it was something at CAM, California African American Museum.
Oh, okay. Right.
Does that sound familiar?
That sounds familiar. But that goes back, I think, like to the late 80s or early 90s, something like that.
Oh, yes.
Does that make sense?
CAM has been there since 1984. So,
right.
Yes, indeed. It would be that long.
Oh. So, Phoebe, you are from Cleveland originally, but how did you end up in Los Angeles, or the Los Angeles area, I should say?
Well, I started, no question about it, in Cleveland. Born there and went to school at Ohio University, and also ended up teaching high school in Cleveland. So I went back after I graduated and had my degree in painting and in education. And I knew that I wanted to move out of Cleveland. Wasn't sure exactly the direction I wanted to go, but my brother lived here and said, if you're thinking about any place, come to Los Angeles. You at least have one person of family here. And I thought, okay, well, that sounds pretty good. So, and that was in 1969. So we're doing the math on that one.
It's, yeah, quite a while.
50 years, yes.
And at the time that you moved, were you active as an artist at that point? Or?
I was. And not only was I trying to get into galleries in Cleveland, which in those days, in the early 60s, proved very difficult. So there was a group of us, African Americans, who actually started our own, you know, necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah.
We found a storefront that was empty, and it was $100, and there were 10 of us, so we had $10 a month. That was our rental fee for our space that we would have, and we actually started having shows there.
Oh, wow, and this is in Cleveland?
It was in Cleveland,
oh,
yes.
Wow.
And from there, you know, people started to hear about us. And we would have shows like once a month, and Karamu Theater actually had a gallery, and so they invited us to be part of their gallery opening. And, you know, that's how some of us got our work out there.
Oh, my goodness.
But doing this and also teaching at the same time, you know, working as a teacher during the day in high school, art teacher, and then coming home and painting. So I was so used to having multitasking in two careers that once I moved out here and originally got into radio. So again, two careers, the art and radio, and eventually was our sales in radio.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I was just curious, are you ever in touch with any of the other artists that form that sort of collective of 10 artists in Cleveland? Do you ever see
actually,
or hear about them?
I did see one at the Broad Theater. Actually, it was the Broad Museum downtown when they had The Soul of a Nation.
Oh.
And it was Nelson Stevens. And he was actually a teacher in Cleveland. He taught junior high school.
Oh, wow.
And he was in that Afro Cobra part of the exhibit that was at the Soul of a Nation.
And by the way, you actually led a tour, as I recall, right?
I did. That was so, oh, I was so honored to do that and to talk about people that I knew or had worked with or had shows with and had quite a turnout. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes.
I was just curious, though, going backwards again, you started out as a painter, is that right? And then kind of got into collage, and collage is basically your medium, if that's okay to say.
It's okay to say,
yes. And how did that transition happen?
I think it was students when I was teaching high school, and we actually ran out of ink and paint, and so I had to improvise with my students, and it was collage and newspapers and magazines and putting together found objects, and I liked so much what they were doing. Now, I had done some of this in at Ohio University as a painter.
Yeah.
But to see what my students were doing so inspired me that I continue to do, to go home and do it at night. So that's how.
Well, one thing that was really impressive some time ago, I remember being in your studio and you had all these papers from literally just about everywhere, right? I mean, you collect these things and keep them for use later on, right?
I collect them. You know, it seems like they've been there since I've been there.
Yeah.
And what happens is I'm so, oh goodness, I'm so excited when I see different papers, materials, that I was at the University of Rhode Island one day and doing artist in residence there. Uh-huh. And I mentioned the professor, I really liked his scarf. And by the time I'd gotten back home, he'd actually sent me the scarf.
Oh, my goodness.
And so it's now, you know, something where I keep looking and going, no, I can't use it yet. I can't use it yet. But, you know, the papers from all over the world, Sri Lanka or India, and you'd see these, the rice papers from Japan, and I was getting so excited by Menge papers that I couldn't wait to work with them. And so I would kind of work my schedule around, let me think of, okay, I want to use this paper. Now, what am I going to do with it? You know, it's going to go in there, but I just don't know what the subject matter will be yet. So I had to rework that. And then people started having a door at the front door of their homes. They actually have a Phoebe box. And it's everything they don't want. You know, they've been throwing things in it for weeks because everybody is desessioning. I'm the only house that's accessioning. And so it's all, let's give it to Phoebe. There's some wrapping paper. Here's my grandmother's old clock. Here's my. And so you go to people's houses and they think, oh, I've got something for you, Phoebe. I've got, and I thought, so it's like another Phoebe box. But I'm so excited to see what people are willing to discard. So
that's so interesting, though. I mean, if to look inside of the box, you're not knowing what's going to be in there.
Yes,
and it could help inform what you're going to end up doing on the canvas.
It does. And sometimes they will give you a little history about why they collected, what they did. And at the University of Alabama, a couple years ago, I was down there doing an artist in residence in Tuscaloosa. Oh. And I mentioned about the one at the University of Rhode Island had given me this, sent me the scarf. Well, they had a luncheon for me at the University of Alabama the next day. And one of the professors walked in with this box. And I thought, no, no, no. She said, Professor Green said, you look more like my mother. My mother sends me her stuff, but you look more like her. If you can't use it on your collage, then wear it. Do whatever you want.
That's so cool.
And then sent me more boxes once I got home.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes.
That is so nice, though.
Yeah, it is.
Very considerate.
Yes.
Excellent. Excellent. So, Phoebe, you know, one of the things I remember, so you had this wonderful show at the University of Laverne.
Yes.
Not too long ago.
Yes.
And I just remember, there's a piece in particular called Leaving Colored Only.
Yes.
And so one of the things that I remember about that piece, it was very personal because it was like a tribute to your stepmother.
It was a tribute, and it was also that she was never had that much good to say about herself. Mm. Now, here's a woman who spoke four languages, Latin, French, Spanish and English, and was always at the top of her class. But because she came from Texas, you know, in another time and place, she never felt worthy. Hmm. And so I thought, well, I'll just do some paintings around her life and dedicate it to her, the show to her. And Leaving Colored Only was about leaving Texas, moving to the North, moving to Cleveland, winning the French medal in high school.
Oh, wow.
And yet all of that baggage that you have as a child, you never feel worthy. And unfortunately, she passed away before the show opened. It was at your gallery, I believe it was 2008.
Oh, right.
And she would have been saying, oh, no, why me? I'm not worthy. And I thought, oh, my goodness. But that was Leaving Colored Only and moving to another time and place where you could do things with your life and you could explore, and also you had more opportunities.
Yeah.
And as people were leaving in the Great Migration, she was part of that.
So that was really a multitude of things that impressed me about that piece, because it was personal, but also like the name of the title implies, there were signs that were confronting black people all the time. Listen, you go to the back and colored only and that kind of thing.
Yes.
So that's what they were leaving, basically, Jim Crow segregation.
Yes, and to see that every day of your life, to know that you always had to, you were always second class. You were always sent to the back.
Yeah.
You were, never felt worthy.
Right.
And I also did an artwork called The Class of 33.
Yeah.
And it was her class at Wilberforce. Wilberforce was a college in Ohio.
Historically black college, correct?
It was the first one, yes. And now it's Wilberforce University. But when she went there and was in the class of 33, she actually gave me this whole photograph at one point, this long photograph that I thought.
Wonderful panoramic photo of the class, graduating class, right?
Oh, my goodness. And you just can't even imagine what they went through to be the class of 33 and then go out in the world.
Well, that's what's so amazing to me is that in the face of all of that discrimination and so forth, your stepmom actually was able to master four languages.
Oh, absolutely.
Come away with a degree in higher education.
Yes.
I mean, it's just phenomenal.
One of the first women to and persons of color to work at the IRS. And then from there, the post office. You know, we can't imagine the post office being segregated in our lifetime, but it wasn't that long ago.
Right.
That it was like any other organization, company. So,
yeah, unfortunately, it was a fact of life. I know my father, for instance, he got a job with the NIH way back in the 40s during the World War II, and they found out that he was actually black, and next thing you know, they reorganized the entire department to eliminate the job he was already hired for.
And NIH was the National Institute of
Health.
Health, and your father was a scientist.
He was a chemist.
I recall.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I mean, it's a fact of life.
Yes, and you saw the repercussions in him.
Oh, my God. Next thing you know, he gets drafted in the military, and the military itself was segregated.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, he talked about coming back. I thought about this because you did a piece that I think addressed when President Truman ended
absolutely
segregation, I think.
It was Executive Order 9981.
Exactly.
And it was the order to that you could begin to desegregate. It was written in very terms that didn't have to be right now, but it was the beginning of desegregating the armed services.
Yeah, because my dad told me this horror story. So he comes back after World War II. He was in the Pacific Theater.
Yes.
And he and other black officers, he was an officer, he was at that time a first lieutenant.
Yes.
And so the train, they're back in the States, and so now he's trying to get on a train. And the colored-only car was full.
Oh, my goodness.
But the white car wasn't. And so what they did, he told me, imagine these guys are all in uniform.
Yes.
And so a person that worked for the train company dragged a string across part of the car, draped newspapers over it. And so behind the newspaper border was where the black officers had to sit.
Goodness.
And so anyway, that was just an extreme example of how far this segregation thing went.
Yes. And it sounds extreme now, but in those days,
it was a fact of life.
It was normal.
Yeah.
It was the normalcy. It was,
yes. But back to your stepmom, that was the kind of thing that she was leaving. And a lot of blacks were leaving to try to find a better way.
Yes, the book that had such an impact too, and on me doing an artwork was Isabel Wilkinson's The Warmth of Other Suns, and it was about that migration from, the early 1900s to about 1971. That 6 million African Americans left the South for better opportunities in the West and North.
Yeah.
And, it really hit some clarity for me that that was why my grandparents left.
Yeah.
And I did one artwork that had to do with in the Garden of the Buick, because so many African-American men came to Cleveland, were working in the plants, the automotive automotive industry, and the car they most wanted to drive was the Buick 225, what we called it, the deuce and a quarter.
Oh my goodness.
And when somebody bought that car, it didn't matter whether they had a house that was falling down, but you had the deuce and a quarter, the 225. You had it on your front lawn. You wanted to make sure the whole neighborhood saw it, that anybody who passed that street would know that you had arrived, both financially and economically, but also educationally.
Oh, yeah.
You had
simply... It was a status symbol.
It was the status symbol for many men.
Yeah.
And families who worked in the plants and have left the South, and now they have achieved a middle class.
Yeah.
So it was quite something.
Yeah. Well, there's a piece that's actually in the background here, to my left and to your right, that you did in collaboration with Maya Angelou. Yes. And there's a woman there holding a sign saying, "Don't buy where you can't work."
Yes.
So that's... think it's really a very powerful statement of defiance of that system.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, is that...
Oh, goodness.
Can you talk about not only that, but also eventually that collaboration with Maya Angelou, and that's a poem next to the figure by Langston Hughes called Mother to Son.
Mother to Son, as still's climbing. Oh, well, to start with, when I got a call from Maya Angelou, and here's someone who is not only a collector of my work, but a dear friend and a mentor. And so she left me a voicemail. It was one of those voicemails that was on tape, and it was, "Fabe, dear, I want you to think about this new adventure, this new problem, this new that only you can solve. And it is to illustrate the work of the great Langston Hughes." And I thought,
goodness.
I really hearing this, you know? And you're hearing
I'm actually getting chills listening to you describe this. This is amazing.
Yeah. And I hope that you will consider doing this. And I have always let them know that there's nobody else who should be doing this but you. And I thought,
oh my goodness.
And I thought, you know, when your mentors can see things in you that others cannot, and you can't even see it in yourself, and you think, she thinks I can illustrate the work of Langston Hughes.
Oh my God. And her stature. I mean, oh my God, one of the most respected.
Yes. And so, you know, all of a sudden you start getting the chills and the self-doubt and, you know, I don't know whether I can do this. And let me think about a way to say no. You know? And I thought, no, that's not going to happen with the woman who left that message.
I was going to say, she wasn't going to take no for an answer, right?
No. And she'd already talked to the publishers. And so they were calling and saying, "Congratulations, you know, we have selected your work. Were you to illustrate this a book along with..." And then that's when they told me that Maya would also have a part in it. She would be titling the work, titling the compilation, and also selecting the poems of Langston Hughes and writing the foreword on him and the afterword on me. So she actually would have all of these parts.
A big role,
Yes, which she didn't mention either.
Oh, wow.
So she was just an incredibly thoughtful, caring, and...
Well, you had a special relationship with Maya, right?
Yes, it did. Yes.
Yeah, that's so interesting and exciting, I think.
Yes, and particularly when she lived out here, and I tried to convince her not to move to North Carolina, to Winston-Salem, you know, Maya, things were, you know, she was working at 20th Century Fox and doing its sisters there, but she was trying to convince me that the best place for me would be Winston-Salem to move. And I thought, oh, no. I thought, hold up.
Time out.
And she was telling me how cheap, you know, property was. And
she was selling it.
That's right. You know, and even when she finally moved there, you know, and I'd go see her. And she would take me around to see houses in Phoebe you could be living in. You know. And she had just so embraced Winston-Salem.
Yeah.
And
that's where she ultimately moved and lived to the end of her life, right?
Yes, she did. Yeah. And she was a Reynolds professor's chair at Wake Forest. Oh. And yes, until the day she died. So she was...
Well, back to this collaboration, by the way. So just so everybody knows, there were like 6 images you created, if I'm not mistaken, and there were 8 poems.
That's true.
Is that correct?
Yes. And for some reason, the editor and the publisher said, no, 6 is enough.
6 is enough. They didn't want to have too many. Image for each poem.
Exactly. Hmm. And I thought, okay, it seems like something's missing for me. But I got to work on a book where I selected the cover and lettering and it was a handmade book. Yeah. So,
and a big, when you say book, I mean, it was dimensionally, it was pretty big. I mean,
it's big and it's heavy.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Very nicely done though.
Yes.
And a limited edition. But did you create works specifically for it, or did you just look into your already created works and select from there?
Both. You know, if I thought that I had a work that would work with the poem, but for the most part, you know, I was creating works.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And how much back and forth between you and Maya took place? I mean, was there, at that point, was it just up to you to figure out?
It was, you know, it was just up to me. Yeah. She just wanted to know when the book would be finished and who she would be sending it to, you know, but she trusted my vision.
That's awesome.
And now that I'm thinking about it, all of them were made for that book. Yeah.
Well, to me, it's like
I'm thinking of. Yeah, I may have taken parts of another artwork to include that, but all of them had to be, you know, their original.
Boy, I love that piece.
Thank you.
It's a perfect
thing. Thank you. Yeah. And when you talk to individuals who actually went through those times, you know, I guess I am just so grateful and thankful that my parents and grandparents went through such a horrendous time.
Oh, yeah.
That when I think about getting up every morning, and I thought, this is the easy part, you know, this is not a problem. You know, the problems they went through were really problems.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, figuring out how to get on, you know, the people say, how can you drive in L.A. or how long did it take?
Right.
It's okay.
Yeah, right. You know? Relatively speaking.
I got a car.
That's a fun. Right.
I got gas for the car.
Right.
You know, you're so thankful that you don't have a side road to take because of your color or you can't go certain places.
Well, yes, exactly. I remember at one of your shows, let's see, that was, what was the name of that show you participated in? I'm sorry, I couldn't remember the name of the show, but it was... near the LA County Fairgrounds. Do you know what I remember?
Oh, goodness, about? Route 66.
Route 66.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember being in that show, and they were selling copies of the Green Book.
Yes, yes.
Which basically meant, I mean, it was a book, a reference book, telling African-Americans where they could stay to avoid all the segregated hotels and accommodations and so forth.
Yes.
And I just thought it was interesting because it's Route 66, and that's going cross country.
Absolutely.
So the trip if you're planning as an African American to take that trip in your car, you had a whole different calculation to make, right?
You sure did.
Yeah.
That no one who was a Caucasian had to
deal with that.
Know any of those places, and so it wasn't until the movie that most people understood that there was a Green Book, and it was special for every major city and. So many people added to it and opened businesses and managed to stay in business because they knew they had a clientele that was going to be coming to them. And
And were you happy with the show, by the way, the Route 66?
Oh, goodness, I enjoyed it. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
Because you ended up making, it was a pretty sizable piece for that, right?
Yes. One was 6 feet and worked with students on that. And so the space was 20 feet by 30 feet. I mean, it was just a huge space that they had dedicated to each artist to come up with how we saw Route 66. And knowing that it ended at the Santa Monica Pier also, that you could see the sign, the end of the road, Route 66,
yes.
But to see so many images of how others saw Route 66 was quite exciting.
It was very cool, yes. The whole show. I really enjoyed seeing the whole show, but especially your
particular addition to it.
Thank you.
Another artwork that reminded me of what my ancestors went through was my stepmother's brother. He was in World War II.
Uh-huh.
And so because I'm the longest liver in my family, I have the repository from everybody who's passed away.
So basically like an archive.
I have everything.
Oh, wow.
And I had his medals from World War II.
Oh, wow.
And some he had won because he was in the French theater. He was in Germany and France. Uh-huh. Once he came back to Cleveland after the war and couldn't find a job, and my stepmother always said, Mill always said he was the smartest one of the three kids, but he ended up on the streets being a wino and died in a knife fight. And so it was just... an artwork that I wanted to do that kind of was dedicated to her brother. Mm. He called him brother, but his real name was Luther Gaines.
Uh-huh.
And when I did get the call from the University of Alabama, I think it was an email, then a call, to come to Tuscaloosa, to the University of Alabama, I thought, I never heard anything good from my family about Alabama other than, whew, glad we're not there.
Whew, yeah.
Good grief. Glad we don't have to go back there.
Right.
And I thought to myself, do I really want to go to Alabama?
Right.
And I thought, well, maybe I would be the first one to change something and to make Luther Gaines kind of feel at home, that that all of his efforts in the war and getting us to this point, we were a nation that we didn't have as many dividing lines,
right,
and going back south to places that were not welcoming.
Well, I keep thinking University of Alabama, you think of George Wallace standing there.
Oh, yes.
Trying to forbid the entrance of a black person going there.
Oh, yes, yes. And you know, saw that entrance. When I did go there, I said, yes, I'll come. And
Wow, that's very powerful.
It was one of the most welcoming trips I've ever taken.
Oh, wow.
To show my work. And so I'm...
So that was it a part of an exhibit?
Yes, it was an exhibit and also artist in residence. So,
oh, wow.
I had a great time at the University of Alabama.
Oh, that's great. And what a tribute. And a tragedy, though. It breaks my heart to hear about essentially your uncle, I guess.
It was. Yeah. And so when I think about getting up and how difficult and people talking about how bad things are, and there are areas that are pretty bad, as we well know.
Sure.
You know, it's not just how far we've come, but how far we've got to go.
Oh, yeah.
But those of us who have lived through all these iterations of movements and seen how much we've closed certain gaps or opened certain areas for all of us.
Yeah.
We just know we just keep getting up. If there's any secret to this, you just keep getting up and you keep doing the work.
Yeah.
And be grateful and thankful that so many people lived and died on your behalf.
Yes.
Get you to this place.
Something that I think too often gets taken for granted.
Yes, yes. So if you look at my work, for the most part, it's celebratory because of the people who came before me.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand why I'm here. I think I've got a grasp on, if I can tell the story through my work, of what it was like for so many people and what that work and what that looks like now. Yeah. So there is some comparison. At least it's part of the memory, you know. Our muscle memory, our institutional memory, I mean, it goes in a flash now. So
well, everything's all speeded up, right? No, people look at their phones and they're not using it as a phone so much as a medium to the outside world.
Yes, and we spend more time looking at what other people are doing and wishing we were part of their life than spending time on our own life.
Yeah.
And one of the things I always lecture about is we need to turn off everything and listen to ourselves.
I think that's a powerful thing.
We don't spend enough time listening to what we want and what we should be doing. And I know at one point I was talking about turning off television. Well, and I remember going backstage after I finished the lecture on spending more time with what your creativity is, what your purpose is. And there were two people backstage that said, I don't watch television that much. You just think I do. And she, yes, you do. And so they were arguing. I thought, let me go out the other door.
Totally in the middle of that
one. That's right. So it's amazing what we think we're doing with our time.
Yeah, right.
And all of a sudden you look at what the day looks like and you think, what have I done to move the needle? What have I done to help somebody? What have I done to create something? Yeah. I know I want to do this, but how many days am I just going to sit here and think about it? So it's part of that.
But that's one of the things I think is so compelling about your work, though, that acknowledgement of what happened in the past to bring us to the present.
Yes.
And also to keep in mind to prevent some of these things from happening in the future.
Absolutely. Yes. I was doing a lecture at and an art exhibit at downtown at the Federal Reserve Bank.
Oh, really?
You know, on Grand Avenue. Most people don't know
that. I didn't know that.
That more money is downtown than any place else because that's the distribution for the Western states.
Oh, wow.
And so even though it's called the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco.
It's located
Los Angeles branch. It's
Los Angeles.
It is.
Okay.
Yes, and you know, when you see cash, the dog who sniffs your car before you can even go in. And when they invited me to do a lecture and also a luncheon and an artist in residence kind of situation where I would talk to people in the cash division, and they had me hooked up with all seven divisions on the western side, whether it's Hawaii or Oregon or...
That's too cool.
Oh, it was. It was.
I would never expect anybody to say that. That's just amazing.
Well,
how was that? I mean,
was. I had an absolute joy doing it.
Oh,
it was
fantastic!
But one of the artworks I took was wheels down at LAX and see the work, the elegance and style of Paul R. Williams Architect, who was the first African American architect in. In America, in that association. And he also did the L.A. theme at LAX and the Beverly Hills Hotel and so many of the Bank of Americas. But to talk about the fact that he also started a bank. He started Broadway Federal Bank. Paul Williams and his other in-law, Claude Hudson.
Wow.
So were two of the men who started it because people couldn't get loans from traditional banks.
Wow.
And so Broadway
because
Federal
of their
bank,
race, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You couldn't get And I said, write this down or type this down, but you got to remember the name Paul R. Williams. Look it up. Because the reason there are Broadway Federal Banks here
is because of him.
Because of him. And he wasn't just an architect. He realized that the money, how it flowed, that he wasn't at that table.
Yeah.
And you couldn't get a loan and nobody else could. And as an architect, he saw how that money worked.
Yeah.
And so talking about that and people writing things down or typing. And one woman had told me afterwards, she said she actually worked at Broadway Federal Bank at one point.
Oh, my goodness.
She came up to me.
And she was at that time working at the Reserve?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
And she now is working at the Federal Reserve. And you just never know what your conversations monologues are going to.
That is so cool.
Yes, yes.
You know, I think I saw where they're doing on PBS a program about Paul Williams.
Yes, they are.
And it's coming up soon. That's fantastic. And then he also designed Golden State Mutual Insurance Company.
You're so right. Yeah. Yes. And the courthouse downtown. And
well, you know, it's so funny. I have a client of mine bought a home that was designed, this was a personal residence, that was designed by Paul Williams. And the irony of it was located at a time, at this particular time that it was built, it was located in an area where Paul Williams himself couldn't live.
Yes.
Because it was segregated.
Yes.
And so he actually looked up the codicil or whatever they call it.
Yes.
That actually detailed that you couldn't sell, if you were the owner, you couldn't sell to a black person or a Mexican, and it was a list of people you could not sell.
Yes.
And the irony was just so amazing.
Wasn't it?
I mean, a person designs, of his talent, he designs the house in an area he couldn't even live in.
And one of the things that we learned from Karen's books, Karen Hudson, his granddaughter, who is the keeper of his legacy and writes these incredible books on her grandfather.
Yeah.
Was that Paul Williams learned to write upside down so he wouldn't have to go on the same side of the person he was talking to.
Oh, my goodness.
If they were white, and shake their hand. That he learned to write upside down so the desk was between them. And so
you
can't even imagine somebody going through all of this.
That's incredible. And it sounds absurd, too.
That
would be offensive to...
Yes.
Just stand next to somebody. I mean, good Lord.
Well, she was the one who said yes to me using some of the renderings from her books on his drawings and his architectural renderings and photographs.
Was that included in that piece you just mentioned?
Yes,
Oh, that's fantastic.
And so I'm grateful to my friendship with Karen and learning so much about her grandfather.
Oh, that's awesome.
So
yeah,
we're just... quite fortunate of the people we have in Los Angeles that sometimes we don't revere. And Paul Williams actually designed the houses of people like Frank Sinatra and Lucille Ball.
Oh, wow.
And what was happening, too, is that we would watch these programs on early television like Edward R. Murrow, and they would take you into these celebrity homes. We had no idea that the architecture was an African-American.
Right.
But it was the homes we wanted to live in. And so we got a sense of what that grandeur looked like. And so it's every time I'm in a Paul Williams home, I feel like I'm home.
Oh, that's too cool. Like, that's awesome.
I'm in a home of friends. I'm in a friendship home.
That's awesome.
Oh,
yeah,
goodness.
That's fantastic.
Thank you.
So Phoebe, I'm just trying to think back now. You had some kind of a relationship with Oprah Winfrey, right? I mean, I'm forgetting the name of the movie or program it was, if you could tell us.
Women of Brewster Place.
Women of Brewster Place. Yes. I couldn't think of it,
That came through Maya Angelou. Again, many of those connections came through Maya. At one point, I think I first got a phone call from Stedman Graham, and, you know, he was the friend of Oprah Winfrey, and he wanted to... He was thinking about a Christmas present for Oprah, and he had talked to Maya, and she suggested to him that he talk to me. Yes, and I thought, okay, well, we said, do you have anything that you know? And he told me some things that she really cared about, like women's issues and African American issues, and. I thought, well, perhaps we could do something just for her also. Mm-hmm. And he said something about meet me at, they were staying in a hotel. She had some event that they were going to. And this was a few days later, they were going to be in LA. And I thought, okay. And I thought, okay, goodness, I have to take time for my radio because, you know, it was on a Sunday, but that's when you got ready for the next day a lot of times and being in radio. And I thought, okay, that's going to have to wait. I am meeting with Stedman Graham today. And at some point, she got wind of it and said, I hear you coming over here. Okay, I guess I'm having more of a meeting than I thought. I had actually started working on the piece. because he sent me some things, but really it wasn't enough. Photographs and things that he thought might be important.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, okay, well, let me just sit here for a moment and center myself and maybe I can conjure up some things.
Yeah.
And because I didn't watch television very much, you know, I really didn't have a sense with other than she was on the air and
yeah.
she was fairly new. And I'd already started the piece when I went to see them. And she said, okay, well, let's talk about the piece. And I thought, okay, well, would you like to know what I've already done? So, and I started telling her, and I was sitting in where they were getting her ready for this event and doing her hair and her nails and makeup. And so the only place to sit was on the rail of the bathtub,
oh.
looking at her through a mirror. And
that's an interesting visual.
I know. And I said, well, you know, it has you in it, in the artwork, and you're 6 years old or about that age,
oh.
and there's a woman who's elderly who's sitting at the edge of the bed, and she has glasses, and I think Oprah had said, no, she didn't have glasses. You're talking about my grandmother? She didn't have glasses. And
oh.
I thought, oh, okay. And I kept thinking, darn it, I made them out of metal and little wire glasses and it had glass. And I wanted to say, no, no, no.
She just shot that
That's
down.
Right. That's right. You know, that median gel, you just can't take things off real quick.
Come on, slow down.
I'd have to cut into the canvas. I think, okay, don't tell her my problems. Don't mention this. And at one point, and I was saying, you know, it's a chenille bedspread, and it has little yellow balls all over it. That's what I saw.
Yeah.
And she said, wait a minute, hold on. And I thought,
uh-oh.
This is not good.
She's giving you lots of notes.
And then she said, I just realized my grandmother did have glasses. And I
oh.
thought, oh, thank the goodness. Really? And she said, yes, but she only used them. She only put them on when she was reading the Bible. And I thought, Oprah, the glasses are on top of a Bible that I have in her lap.
Oh, my God, that's giving me chill bumps. What a coincidence.
So she said, oh, okay. You're remembering my childhood better than I am. Yeah, that's kind of what artists do. That's what we do when we sit up and we just start thinking about.
Yeah.
And so then I said, there's a figure on the other side of the bed and, an older gentleman. She said, there was nobody there.
Mm-hmm.
There was no older gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
And, I said, okay, though, darn, who did I see? Who did I think I saw? And then at one point she stopped and she had tears and she said,
oh.
You have an intuitiveness. It was her grandfather. And
oh,
she
wow.
said, I never talked about him. I never mentioned him because he only yelled at me. And I said, do you want to leave him in? And so she said, he was a shadowy figure. I thought, well, that's what he is. You know, it's just a shadow of a figure.
Yeah.
And I think I can tell this because, she had, after the artwork was sent to her and I hadn't heard from her, and I thought, oh, do I call her? Do I wait for her to call me? Do I want to make sure she got it? Is
yeah.
it okay?
It sounds kind of suspenseful you might have been in.
Yeah. And one point she said, well, you know, I said, there's a doll. She said, well, I had a corn cob doll. And I thought, a what? I mean, I thought, I couldn't even imagine.
Yeah.
And when she said that, she said, we were so poor that my doll was made of corn cob
wow.
and then it had a skirt on it.
Oh, wow.
And so I remember leaving the meeting. Because she said, okay, you don't need it for Christmas, you know, don't worry about that. Have it for my birthday, you know, I think it's coming up soon, like January 29th or sometime this week.
Okay.
And so just make sure you have it for then. I thought, oh, Kenneth, a great guy, a little more time. And I went straight to a Ralph's and got a piece of corn and took it home. Started cutting it down the shaft and trying to imagine being that poor.
Yeah.
That you had a doll that was
made from a corn cob.
Corn cob. And when she did get the artwork, and she was kind of crying and talking about it, and she said, I will never live in a house where this painting doesn't hang.
Oh, wow.
And so just knowing that, I thought, okay, I guess it's okay to talk about it.
Yeah.
And but it was and then she would call me with other projects, Women of Brewster Place. Mm-hmm. Can you come over at night after work and stay on the set and do some sketches and then come up with some artworks for that I want to give to the staff and to the people who were working on this, the crew, the actors, actresses.
So the Woman of Brewster Place, was that like a series? I forgot now.
Actually, I did two artworks for it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And did a whole, line drawings, because I was on the set and I was drawing from there.
Okay.
And I had some photographs that were sent to me. But, I did two artworks from that series.
Oh, okay.
And then the whole series of line drawings.
But that must have been, I'm imagining that must have been very rewarding for you as an artist to be able to create a piece and evoke that kind of emotion.
Yes.
I mean, from Oprah, but even if it was anyone else, I mean, just to have that kind of sensitivity to touch someone that way.
It's interesting because the worst thing that somebody can say to me is, I want to commission you. And you think, no,
right.
Buy something I already have.
Yeah, right, you know? Right.
Because I have to work off of your brain,
yes,
of the brain of somebody else. And then I've got to make sure you like it before you buy it.
Yes.
And I have a friend, Bernard Kenzie, and he wanted me to do one of Shirley Kenzie, his wife.
Mm-hmm.
For her 60th, as a surprise, and I thought, no, that's too many people. You gotta please. I gotta please you because you're the buyer.
Right.
I gotta please Shirley, who may look at it and say,
"That's not me.
Who is that? That looked like Gumby to me." What, babe? I thought we were friends. I mean, any of these things can happen to you.
Oh, especially it's funny. I've talked to several
Bernard.
Oh my God, yes. But just anybody. I've talked to several artists to say one of the worst things, one of the worst assignments is to do a portrait because people have a vision of themselves.
Yes.
Even if you accurately portray them sometimes, it's not how they see themselves. And unless you nail how they see themselves, and you can't know that without actually getting inside their head kind of way.
You're reading their brain and trying to go off of what you know.
Yeah, yeah.
At one point, I got a call from Ruben Cannon, who's a producer, mm-hmm. film producer. And Ruben had bought my work and bought something I already had. But he wanted to introduce me to Tyler Perry. At that time, I had no idea who Tyler Perry was.
Yeah.
He had movies, and also he was doing stage plays. And he said, okay, Phoebe. Ruben said, I'm in New York. Tyler's in Atlanta. I'm going to put you on a three-way. Here I am in Los Angeles. And it was, hello, Tyler. And he's got this idea that he's going to this thing that Oprah's giving, this event, this gala,
mm-hmm.
of people who are important to her, women who are the most important to her, like 10, 20 of them. And he wanted me to do an artwork from that.
Hmm.
And I thought, okay. Now, here's Tyler. I had no idea who he was. And so we agreed on a price. You know, you thought, fine, let's try to do this.
Yeah.
And he's saying what he thinks is important to him and about Oprah, in his life, and also these women that he had met.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I got off the phone and thought, oh, great. Now I can start inhaling. It's now time to inhale, and maybe one day I'll get a chance to exhale. And either, I take this work over to him.
Yeah.
And when I took it to, he was living or had a house in Big Rock in Malibu. And I took it to the home, and someone met me at the door, and I thought, and I was going to say, hello, Tyler. It wasn't. He said, I will take you to Mr. Perry.
Oh.
And I was meeting Tyler for the first time, mm-hmm. and he said, okay, let's unwrap it. I was not in a hurry to unwrap it. I thought maybe I should cajole him. Maybe we should talk about this a little first.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of prepare him
exactly,
for what he's
about to see. Yeah. Exactly. But he says, okay, let's do it. And he said, oh my goodness, it's so much more than I thought it would be. I can't believe
it. That must have been a relief.
And his back was to me when I think he said, are you okay? And I said, now I can feel as though I can breathe
yeah.
a little. And he said, Phoebe, I left it to you and God. And I thought, oh, geez. Oh,
wow.
Okay. And I thought, okay, I should have known I had angels and I had, you know, the Lord right there when I was doing all of this.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're thinking of this and trying to work in the middle of the night and working off somebody else's brain. And then he said, okay, do you have... And I said, oh, by the way, I brought you a catalog from the M. Hanks Gallery. And he said, oh, you have time to go through it? And I thought, a quick check of my agenda reveals I got plenty of time. I'm just busy. There's nothing else to do here. And so I started turning pages, and he was saying, how much is that? How much is that one? Is that for sale? And I thought, Tyler, I didn't bring a checklist with me. I didn't bring a list of a cost
right.
sheet with me.
Right.
It's not like some...
It's not like a Sears catalog.
That's the M. Hanks Gallery sells. I thought, I've got one at home, I'm sure, but it's the gallery that, you know, sells the work for me.
Yes.
And he said, well, get back to me. Here's my secretary's name. You just get back to me on these that I'm interested in. And I thought... I think the first thing I did, and I was still in the car when I called you and
yes.
said, I have someone's interested in several works.
I remember getting that call, and I'm getting chill bumps remembering it. Yeah, that was really exciting. Exciting. Good Lord.
That was fun.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, now yes, they're all available. Yeah. And yes, fine, Phoebe, just tell me where you want me to send in the check. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is, you know,
yeah,
the M. Hanks
great.
Gallery. We just had fun with that.
That was really, that was a great show too, by the way. I really enjoyed that whole thing and the catalog, yeah. which actually we have sitting next to us too.
Yes.
That was such a wonderful project.
Thank you. It was a joy to do it. And you know, we spent so much time working on something that detail that I'm surprised we're still friends. I'm surprised we didn't. I thought he has the patience of Job.
No, that was really great.
Oh, goodness.
And I think the final outcome was very, very, I thought,
yes.
very good.
Yes.
The catalog and the show itself.
And it's done just wonders for us. I know when I called you and said, okay, LaTanya is bringing Samuel L. Jackson with her.
Oh my God, I remember that day.
Just
too.
Got off a plane.
I remember that day, man. He comes in, and both of them, and here we are in the gap, sitting in the gallery.
Yeah,
and
we're wondering if they'll show up at 6 o'clock.
And they actually showed up
at the exact hour.
I remember that was such an exciting thing.
And I spent about 3 hours there, and
that was wonderful. Asking questions and just admiring the work and ultimately investing in a lot of it. That was fantastic. I remember that like it was yesterday. Yesterday. They were so wonderful to work with, too.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And he had said to her at one point, well, I thought you wanted another one. You want that one, too? You want it?
Oh, no. I remember. They started adding up.
Yes.
I kept thinking to myself, wow, this is ka-ching, ka-ching. It's like hitting the lottery almost.
They were
wonderful.
Yes.
They were really wonderful.
Yes. Yeah. And I have so many memories of how people buy work, whether it's friends of mine who will come into the gallery and say, well, my husband does all the buying. I'm here, but, you know, he's the one who gets to select the work. I select, you know, the furniture he does. Or if one of us doesn't like it, the other one doesn't get
Can't
to
get it. Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
Kiss of death every time.
or when one will say, well, what about my Jag? And I thought, That's depreciating.
That's the moment you drive it off the showroom floor.
In value. That's right. I'm appreciating.
Exactly. And like wine, it gets better with time. I would sometimes use that one.
Yes. You can pass it down.
Exactly. A legacy.
That's right. So we have had so many different kinds of people.
Oh, my God, yes.
And you get to know the thought process of how people buy, what they do with discretionary income, what excites them. And when you're around people who really are excited by work, by the art, or as me as an artist, it's just quite special.
Yeah, exactly. It's so rewarding.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And, we know how many people that, you know, that this is just, it's a lifelong journey, you know? It's just, you really got to be in it, and you know that there's going to be an awful lot of no's. And somebody said to me recently, no, I can't do that. I thought, it's okay. No sits on my shoulder. It's ever present with me.
And me too.
It's one of...
Me too.
Because I know one day there's going to be a yes.
Yes.
Maybe not from you, but there will be a yes in my life. So it's okay. You know? I got this far. Because, you know, as artists, we're just... You know, out here showing our wares and kind of opening up all of our thoughts, you know, whether it's literary or you're doing music or you're doing theater. And it's like walking into your mind. Some people are going to like it. Some people are going to say, how much is this ticket going to be for this theater, you know, concert?
Yes. Or
It's going to be the economics of it.
Right.
And
it's a big risk,
it
right?
Is.
I mean, because you're putting yourself out there.
Yes. And I just happen to think we're the most hopeful mammals on this planet, artists.
Yeah.
Because you're expecting somebody to show you who they are by their answers.
Yes, and it's not only about the money. Obviously, money is important,
but it's
kind of an affirmation.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely, yes. In fact, it's someplace down the list because you know that people who really can't afford a work will figure out how to do it. You know, it's kind of like if you can figure out how to get that Jaguar and you can't afford it, you can figure out.
Yeah. I spend my time oftentimes helping them figure that out.
That's
part of my job.
Good part. And you are indeed one of the best.
Thank you.
If you are not the best.
Thank you.
To see you in negotiation, which you're.
Thank you, Phoebe.
We have these affable personalities.
Thank you.
But you know, we have the core of, you know, that we just stick-to-itiveness, tenacity.
Yes. And another thing that I like to rely on is just not really, I don't believe in the hard sell. I don't think you can force anybody to do anything or try to club them over the head with anything. I think it's just a matter of helping them figure out what it is they actually want.
Absolutely.
And how to make it happen, I think. That's the best approach, I think.
Yes.
That's
and when you're talking approach. About something that you should be emotionally invested in.
Yes.
You know, that it's not something where, you know, that's written or it's all figures and it's you know, very numbers oriented. That it has some emotional tie when you're looking at a piece of work.
Yes. As a connection, spiritual.
Exactly.
I think that's the beauty of seeing the piece in person as opposed to just a photograph. Photograph is great.
Yes.
But I think until you're actually in the presence of the piece, you can't really
feel it.
There's
a tactileness.
Yeah.
Yes. And there's a, so when you're wrapping your arms around it, that's one of the things.
Exactly.
Wow.
I wanted to make sure to not forget to bring up the fact that two of the pieces you've completed in the past or maybe were commissioned to do, the presidential seal. I just wanted to get that out there.
Can you
describe that?
Oh, goodness. It started with, you know, one of those wonderful people in my life. She's since passed away, Zora Brown. She lived in Washington, and she was a little upset that my work was not in any Washington gallery. And so she said, I'll take it upon myself to find you a gallery. And I thought, how sweet of you. Well, you know, Laura, let me tell you, that's a full-time job, and it may not pan out. And she said, not to worry, Phoebe. And she went in, I think it was like 39 galleries that she went to. Some would say, you know, we don't want any, because they could see that she was a person of color. If you're looking for work, you know, that if you think we're going to take your work. She said, no, I have a friend. She said, no, we don't represent any African Americans. She heard that. Or we already have one. We don't need any more.
Got the token and that's it.
Exactly. Or she heard so many. She was surprised at the derogatory comments that she would hear just by walking into a gallery.
That's terrible.
And eventually she was getting the, well, we'll get back to you, or thank you very much. There's no need for us to get back to you.
Right.
And that was about as kind as they could be.
Oh, boy.
And one gallery that she walked into, she called me that evening and said, you're not going to believe it. Not only do they want to take your work, but they want to know whether you would be interested in doing a commission work on President Bush.
And this is the first President Bush.
It's the first.
H.W.
Herbert Walker Bush, yes, in 1989.
Okay.
And then Clinton was 93. Hope I'm doing that right with my math.
It sounds right.
Okay. They were looking for an artist, and so she had my artworks there, and she brought them with her, or photographs of them, and they liked what they saw, and they liked the idea that I'd done things in collage. And they thought, oh, this would be interesting to do this and have a posters done as the official artwork. And
Of the President of the United States?
Yes, yes. That's awesome. The inaugural, and have the inaugural seal on the artwork.
That's cool.
So
that's very cool.
The person in the gallery, the owned the gallery, was actually working with the inaugural committee.
Oh.
Because he was already elected. Mm-hmm. It was, let's hurry up and get,
and
you
get
know,
this done.
Let's get this done.
Yeah.
Whoever this woman is that you've got back in L.A., she's got to be fast, too.
Yeah.
And... you know, it was kind of hard to believe because I had heard the stories, you know, the weeks that she would call and say, well, not yet, but here's some of the bad comments I'd heard. So when she said, you know, I have this commission for you, Phoebe, and I thought, okay, let's roll on it because, you know, that's time's a-wasting. Yes, I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite exciting to do that and see the presidential seal, the inaugural seal on the artwork.
What an honor.
Yes. Yes, it was.
And I know this comes much after the fact, but this deserves yet another congratulations. That's fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you.
So I just wanted to make sure before we close, though, that we know what you're working on now and what you have coming up in the future.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, you know, living in the San Fernando Valley, and that's a part of Los Angeles that's very dry, doesn't get much water. And, you know, you almost have to decide whether you're going to fill your pool or flush your toilet. I mean, that's just, it's come to that.
Yeah.
And so water has become, and how do we need water in our lives? How important is it? Can we live without it? And so doing things that oh, can we get it from other, you know, from the atmosphere and from other galaxies, you know, somehow that we're being clever about how we're using it.
Yeah.
And so I've been thinking more about and working on pieces that have to do with water, surprisingly. And
I think that's great because that's something I think is easy to take for granted.
Yes.
Right? You just turn the shower on and just stay in there for
way
too long. And then and it comes and you don't think more about
it. Until,
but I think that's awesome. Until you're like the old saying, you don't miss your water until the well runs dry.
That's right. Until you find out LA is going to have water police.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Seeing when you wash.
Which we've been through recently with the droughts, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Water rationing, essentially. You can't water your lawn after a certain time.
Yes. So
adding
that to, you know, desert existence, how long can we do this?
Yeah.
Yes. So that's been on some of the artworks I've been working on.
That's fantastic. And any shows coming up?
I'm working on going to Little Rock, Arkansas. So we'll see if the Hearn Gallery, they have talked to me, but I don't have dates yet.
Oh, excellent, so, excellent.
Yes. So.
And the Hearn Gallery located in
Little Rock, Arkansas. And I enjoy that gallery, and they've done a great job. And
great space.
Garbo Hearn. And yeah, they, oh goodness, and want to support make sure those galleries continue. The galleries
exactly.
that are showing so much of people of color.
Yes.
You know, it's just, oh, goodness, we need to support them. So
I think it's an important message to get out there because it's part of the ecosystem that's necessary to keep the artists going.
Absolutely. Yes.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank Phoebe Beasley for sharing her perspective.
Thank all of
you out there for listening and watching. And we'll look forward to the next episode. And don't forget to subscribe.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, Phoebe.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
I really appreciate it.